Chapter 5 begins with the words, Belshazzar the king. As we heard yesterday afternoon, Chapter 4 ends speaking of Nebuchadnezzar's return to power after being driven from men. There's a lapse of time between Chapters 4 and 5, which we'll look at briefly. After Nebuchadnezzar returns and rules for some time, he dies. Evil Merodach succeeds him for a period of 2 years, but is then overthrown. Nergal-Sharpar rules for 4 years and then dies of natural causes. He leaves his throne to Labarsorkad, who is only a child and is revolted against less than a year on the throne. Nabonidus then becomes king, and we find that he is the king at the time of the events of Chapter 5. After reigning for 3 years, Nabonidus makes Belshazzar co-regent with him, putting him in charge of all Babylon. From this, we can see how Belshazzar was, in fact, king. In verse 2, we notice that, in reference to Belshazzar, it says, his father, Nebuchadnezzar. The marginal reference in my Bible indicates that father should be rendered grandfather, noting that in Jeremiah 27, verse 7, it says, and all nations shall serve him, that is, Nebuchadnezzar, and his son's son, until the very time of his land come. We realize then that Belshazzar was not the son of Nebuchadnezzar, but his grandson. So we come back to the first verse. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar throws a great feast, which some may have noted may have been an annual celebration. Whether it was annual or not, we know that at this time, Cyrus and the Medes and Persians are surrounding the city of Babylon. It seems that Cyrus knew that the most important people in the kingdom would be gathered together for this blasphemous party, and used this to his advantage. Belshazzar believed that his city was immune to attack, completely impregnable, and thus took no thought for the army surrounding it. But while the nobles partied through the evening, Cyrus was working to divert the Euphrates River. This is a ground plan of ancient Babylon, and we can see that the Euphrates River ran directly through the city. The city was heavily fortified with walls over 300 feet high, gates of iron and bronze, and other fortifications. But the city's weakest point turned out to be the place where the river passed through the walls and the gates of the city. Cyrus diverts the river, and his soldiers march into the city on the dry riverbed. The overthrow of Babylon by Cyrus had been prophesied of by Jeremiah and Isaiah. We read in Isaiah chapter 45, verses 1 and 2, thus saith Yahweh to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. And we read in Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 38, a drought is upon her waters, and they shall be dried up. The night Babylon was overthrown, the leaved gates spoken of by Isaiah were left open and not locked, allowing Cyrus to enter the city after marching through the wall by the way of the riverbed. Though we don't have time to go into it now, it's worth mentioning that the entirety of Jeremiah chapters 50 and 51 deal with the overthrow of Babylon, as well as Isaiah chapter 13. So while the kingdom's overthrow is nearing its fruition, Belshazzar and the nobles continue their celebration in honor of their gods. Belshazzar commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold, silver, brass, iron, wood, and stone. Belshazzar shows contempt for the prophecies and warnings that had long been known, and commits further offense by bringing the holy items from the temple of Yahweh to the feast of drunken revelry. He then uses the temple items in the worship of the Babylonian idols, but the celebration comes to an abrupt halt. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall in the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Yahweh has finally had enough with the sin and transgression of Babylon, and the time of its overthrow is now ready. Thus, he manifests himself through the angelic hand writing a message on the wall. Though we can't be dogmatic about it, I've read from different sources and would suggest that because the message was written in Hebrew, it would have been written by the hand from right to left, the hand then covering the message written, hiding it from view. This would make sense because we see in verse 24, it says, "Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this is the writing written." There is some question, though, of whether or not the message was in Hebrew at all, or if it was in Aramaic. From what I've read, I'm inclined to think that it was in Hebrew, but I'm very interested to hear comments if anyone has a more definitive answer on that. In any case, I think there is sufficient evidence to say that whether it was written in Hebrew or Aramaic, the message remained hidden by the angelic hand that wrote it. But more on that point in just a minute. The king's countenance was changed, his thoughts troubled him, the joints of his loins were loosed, his knees smote one against another. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold around his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Belshazzar was greatly troubled by the writing on the wall and in his drunken stupor lost all control and was very much afraid. In his fear, he orders the wise men to explain the hand and the writing hidden behind it. We also see that he offers the place of third ruler in the kingdom as a reward for explaining it. This may confuse us as to why the third position in the kingdom was offered, and not the second. But we believe that we have a fairly simple answer. Because Nabonidus was still king, and Belshazzar the co-regent king in charge of Babylon, Belshazzar could only offer the third place in the kingdom. It was the highest available office of honor. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled. The wise men try in vain to understand the supernatural occurrence. Again, I would suggest that this was because the message would still be covered by the angelic hand. If the hand was merely present, but not covering the message, it seems that someone, either at the feast or of the wise men, would have been able to read the words, which were in Hebrew or Aramaic. Thus, similar to Daniel chapter 2 that we read on Monday, it made it impossible for the wise men to offer their own interpretations. Only Yahweh could give the meaning of the angelic hand, and that was to be done through Daniel. For the sake of time, we'll just very quickly look at verses 10 through 17. Seeing his son's distress, the queen mother tells Belshazzar about Daniel, who by this time has been forgotten by the king. It has been roughly 56 years since the vision of Nebuchadnezzar's image, and Daniel is very much out of the picture. The king, seeing no other option, takes the advice of his mother and summons Daniel. He tells Daniel what has happened and offers him the third place in the kingdom if he can interpret the message. Daniel rejects the gifts and honor, but agrees to read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. Daniel, with great courage and being strengthened by Yahweh, pronounces the evil of Belshazzar to be worse than that of his grandfather Nebuchadnezzar's before he was driven from men. "The Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven." Belshazzar knew what had happened to his grandfather and chose to ignore what were valuable lessons to be learned from Nebuchadnezzar's mistakes. So we read in verse 24, "Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written." And this is the writing that was written: "Meni, Meni, Tekel, Upharsin." Meni, Meni. "God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it." The days of the kingdom are numbered. A reference to Genesis 41, verse 32 will offer an explanation as to why the word Meni is doubled. "And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God." and God will shortly bring it to pass. Surely the overthrow of the golden head of Nebuchadnezzar's image will shortly come to pass. Tikal, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Yahweh, who only has a just balance and judges fairly, judged Belshazzar and his kingdom and found the balance to be uneven in idolatry and sin. We read in Job chapter 31, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know mine integrity. Job looked to be found righteous, to not be found wanting on the balances. Belshazzar had no hope of such an end. Upharsin, or Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. The Medes and Persians are knocking on the gates of Babylon as Daniel issues this prophecy, and they shortly will take over the kingdom. We read in Isaiah chapter 13, behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. It had long been prophesied. We notice that in verse 28, the word used is Peres instead of the original word Upharsin. The words mean exactly the same thing, just in different forms and used differently in terms of grammatical structure. And they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Belshazzar follows through on his promise despite the nature of the interpretation and promotes Daniel to the place of third ruler in the kingdom. This would be beneficial to Daniel later after Cyrus invades because it puts him in a position of power as the highest ruler still living in Babylon, making him able to work with Cyrus and to come in favor with Darius. In that night was Belshazzar the king of the Chaldeans slain, and Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Daniel's prophecy was fulfilled immediately that same evening. Belshazzar the idolatrous king was slain, and his kingdom rent to pieces to be taken by Darius. Babylon had been given ample warning to turn from its ways and follow the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but they failed to heed the words of caution. We too should be careful to learn from the men and women in the Bible. Their history is written for our admonition. We should take heed to the warning signs and do our absolute best to correct our course. We too will be found wanting in the balances if we are not on the right path. So in conclusion, I'll leave you with this thought, spoken many years before the overthrow of Babylon, but still very much fitting, the epitome of the burden of Babylon. And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase.